It's Pete Savage from International Freelancers Academy. I'm back with video number 2 in our series on getting clients. And we're talking today about how to write a winning sales letter. If you saw video number 1, just a quick recap. When we're talking about sales letters in this series, we're not talking about salesy, cheesy, pushy, junky, lame type sales letters. We're talking about professional sales letters that establish you as a professional and generate leads for your business. And in the first video, we talked about some real results based on my experience and this handsome devil here, Ed Gandia, who direct mail for Ed was solely responsible for his first client. And it helped him build his freelance business and establish his positioning in his market, particularly with that first client who provided 2 years of business for Ed. One of those clients that he got as well was a client that provided work over the course of 4 years and brought in over $43,000. And then we talked about my results for a sales letter campaign that I mailed, which brought in $64,000 in new business and landed me 2 really excellent clients that have since brought in excess of $100,000. Both of them are still clients of mine to this day. We also just quickly talked about some of the people who recommend sales letters beyond Ed and myself, people like Jill Conrath, who wrote Selling to Big Companies, and of course Michael Port, who talks about a direct outreach strategy in his book series, Book Yourself Solid. And really, this all came about because of the main problem which a lot of freelancers and solo professionals are dealing with right now is that feeling overwhelmed with all the different marketing and promotions options that are out there. And we talked about the best plan of attack is to pick one as an anchor strategy, one that's widely recommended, one that's proven, and start with that or make that part of your core marketing strategy. And then over time, you can add other strategies instead of being overwhelmed by all these options but not having a plan in place to execute any of them very effectively. So I want to play for you an interview with me with some accompanying slides. So it'll be kind of like a webinar, I guess, where you'll get a real sense for some of the details that went into this package that I put together, which really took my business from good to great. So enjoy the interview. You'll hear Chris Marlowe interviewing me about the success that I had with the campaign. And when this interview's over, we'll talk about what's coming up next in this video series.
Pete, thank you for being on this call today.
It's my pleasure, Chris. Thank you for having me.
Why did you roll out with the direct mail package rather than doing article marketing or any of the other forms of marketing?
Direct mail, in my opinion, is the best way to target the types of companies you're going after because, you know, although you can get results from other kinds of marketing like article marketing or, say, search engine optimization, the results you get are not always targeted results. In other words, you get what happens to come your way, whereas with direct mail, it turns that right around. You go out and identify the exact companies you want to have as your clients, and then you go after them with your mailing. So it's very targeted.
So let's give our listeners a mind's eye view of your direct mail package. Pete, can you describe the elements?
Sure. Let's talk about the package. So the elements of the package, I think it's fair to say that they're very visually powerful, but the whole package is really quite simple in terms of what it contains, and here it is. So there's the outer envelope, of course. There's a 2-page sales letter. There's a return envelope, and there's a bulky item. A bulky item is just a very small item that you include inside the envelope to make it look and feel bulky so that the recipient can look at it and say, hey, there's something inside this envelope for me.
This is very high concepting. You'll see this in advertising agencies and direct marketing agencies. Usually they target CEOs or the other really hard to get to people. So I suppose that going to your list, which are titles that are lower than CEOs, it would probably be quite the blockbuster.
That's right. That's what we're saying. It's the bulky item that makes the package irresistible to open. So it takes an envelope from being a regular, boring old envelope that would get lost in the crowd in a pile of mail and turns it into something intriguing, something that stands out and clearly contains something inside for the recipient. So compared to a normal envelope, it's easy to see which one is more inviting and more likely to get opened.
You know, Pete, this has to be the most successful bulky package mailer I've ever seen. You were very scientific in your approach to putting it together. Tell us about the science behind it, how you put it together.
Sure. In terms of the science, I'll give you something that I was diligent about. Was I followed what I call the 90-10 rule when I was writing the sales letter. That's the 90-10 rule, which is after I had written some early drafts of the sales letter, I went back and I found the portion of the sales letter where I talked about myself. In other words, introduced myself or said anything about myself, Pete Savage. And I selected that text and counted up the number of words. And I calculated it and I kept refining it until that percentage of the letter that was focused on me was only took up 10% of the actual number of words on the letter. The other 90% of the letter was all about the prospect and their challenges and the offer and what I was offering for them. Sort of where the science came into it. And then as I was writing the sales letter, I paused many times throughout just trying to make sure that I was getting inside the head of the recipient, the reader of the letter. And, you know, we always hear that and it sounds cliche, but when you're actually going through that writing process, that's what really makes you choose the right words and string the right sort of elements of your copy together and what you're offering to solve for them. And then along the same lines, when I was coming up with the bulky item piece, the concept for the sales letter, it came as a result of a lot of brainstorming and thinking, but always putting in the forefront of that process what's going on in the mind of the recipient. And that really led me towards a package that resonated with them and was successful as a result.
So let's get down to some of the surprising details of your package, Pete. You told me there was some kind of consideration of your logo.
Yeah, that's right. So as I was writing the sales letter, where I placed my logo within the letter was a big consideration for me. And you might think, well, you know, the logo is your letterhead, so it goes at the top of your letter. But I intentionally placed my logo at the bottom of page 2 of the sales letter. You know, everyone has a soft spot for their own logo, but in direct mail, what's important to remember is that branding must always take a backseat to the primary goal, which is generating response. So along those lines, I didn't want my logo splashed across the top of page 1, letterhead style, because that spot was reserved for something important to generating response, which was the headline of the letter. When the recipient opened my letter, in other words, I wanted them to see the headline and read it and not be distracted by a logo or anything else in that area that would kind of take the attention away, dilute the effect of it. So that's what I mean when I say branding has to take a backseat to response. So your headline is important in generating response because it gets the reader to read the letter or parts of your letter. Whereas your logo, in comparison, that's your brand. And in direct mail, your brand isn't center stage. So page 2 was the only option for me to put the logo. But again, I didn't want to put it on the top of the page because there's some very important stuff on the top of page 2 that I wanted the reader to see without being distracted. So really the only spot left for the logo to go was at the end of the letter, which also happens to be the most logical place for it to go because it's right beside my name and my signature. So after a lot of thought, that's where the logo ended up.
Pete, that's genius. I have to say that in my 20 years of copywriting, even working for the most sophisticated agencies, I can't believe that they didn't think about it. I can't believe I didn't think about it, but it's just logical. I think it's brilliant. You really worked hard getting them to the second page. Do you want to talk about the work that you did to make sure that you can get that person into the next page?
Absolutely. So on a 2-page letter, the most important thing to remember is that the very last sentence on page 1 has an enormous job to do, which is that sentence has to convince the reader to flip to page 2 and keep reading. And so you may think, well, that's no big deal for the reader. You just have to turn the page, right? Any one of a million distractions could occur at that moment when they're reading that last sentence on page 1 on your letter. The phone could ring, or the boss could walk in, or an email could arrive, or even worse, they could just lose interest in your letter on that final sentence because you didn't take the extra time to make certain that it was compelling enough to make the reader want to keep reading and turn the page. So there's a couple ways to do that, and a very effective way. And what I did in my sales letter was to make sure that the very last sentence on page 1 doesn't end with a period. In other words, the sentence is long enough so that it starts at the bottom of page one and continues on to page two. Because a period tells a reader, okay, you know, you're done reading this sentence, you can stop reading for a second. You don't want your reader to pause for a second at the bottom of page one. And so this is where the fun comes in, you know, when you're writing your sales letter. All these little details that can take your letter from good to great. And this is an example where you are really in control. In other words, you don't let Microsoft Word tell you, okay, your first page ends here and your second page starts here. You know, you give this area a lot of attention and really rework that sentence so that it's a cliffhanger and that at the end of the page one, the reader is compelled to carry on to page two. So that's one way to do it, but I have another way that I'd like to share is bullet points. And I'll talk about the importance of bullets later on and actually what I recommend you use instead of bullets in a sales letter. But for now, let's just say that your sales letter, you have a bulleted list of, say, six bullet points. You could start that bulleted list at the bottom of page one and list just the first three bullets and then have the rest of the bullets continuing on the next page. So the reader who's looking at page one is thinking, well, I'm reading this bulleted list and I glance at page two and okay, I'll just read the rest of these bullets and there you go. They're on page two. So that's another technique you can use.
Can you tell us about the all-important offer?
Very important to give a lot of thought to your offer. And for my offer, I offered a free report. And basically, my target audience was marketing directors at high-tech companies. And so I found some information online. I spent some time looking up surveys and information from different sources, called it together, and wrote a report around it. And I also conducted my own survey as well that went into the report. So what's important in terms of the sales letter is that the title of the report has to be so compelling that it actually sells itself. You actually use the title of the report as a little space ad, if you will, in a sales letter, because you don't have the room to get into too much detail about what that report contains. And so I'd like to give you four criteria on what makes a great report title. It must make a promise, number one. Number two, it must arouse curiosity. Number three, it really should identify the audience. So if you're targeting marketing directors, it's a really good idea to frame marketing directors in the title of the report. And number four, it needs to be specific. So if you have some specific stats in your report, you should really look for one of the most compelling ones and specifically tell the recipient, the reader, what they're going to get when they see the report.
So let's move on to the bullet points. You promised a little bit of information about them, how powerful they are in a lead gen letter, but yours are different.
Yes, so that's right, Chris. It's very important to have bullet points in a sales letter because a lot of the people who open your letter, we all know, are going to scan through it before they read it or even instead of reading it word for word. So bullet points are a great way to catch their eye, and bullet points get read. So take advantage of this by including that in your sales letter. But what I recommend is use colored check marks instead of actual bullets in your sales letter because a big, brightly colored check mark jumps off the page and catches the eye of the reader. So they do an even better job of getting attention than normal bullets. But more importantly, a check mark is really a symbol that means yes, isn't it? Like we use check marks all the time. When you're filling out a form or answering a questionnaire and you put a check mark in a box, you're essentially saying, yes, this is correct, or yes, I agree with this. So I'm saying take advantage of the fact that everyone associates a check mark with the word yes. And it's important to have the word yes popping up in the reader's mind, subliminally or not, as they read your sales letter as many times as possible. You know, changing a bullet to a check mark is a very, very minor detail in your sales letter, but look at what a difference it makes in the mind of the reader. So it's worth paying attention to little details like that.
Pete, where in the letter do you think you should introduce yourself?
The exact point in time in the letter will vary with everyone's individual sales letter, but generally speaking, don't even mention your name until well past the halfway point of your letter. In fact, it's more towards the end of your letter. So for example, I have a 10-step formula for writing a sales letter. Step 7 is introduce yourself. And up until that point, your sales letter has to focus on more important things like, you know, getting attention, presenting the problem that the reader can relate to, presenting the solution, which is really your offer, and, you know, telling the reader what's in it for them by reading this letter. As you're doing all those things, you're building up your credibility and you're establishing the right tone, and then when the timing is right, you quickly throw your spotlight on yourself for a minute. And then you spend the rest of the letter, you know, making sure you do a good job of closing them, so to speak, so that the reader can take action by responding to your offer.
Great. So we're at DM 101 again. It's not about you. It's about them. You have to give them value for their time reading before you can launch into copy about yourself.
That's right. It's value is what's most important to the reader, because before receiving your letter, you know, they've never heard of you, and frankly, they don't care about you. They don't care about me before they get a letter. They do care about their own problems and challenges, and they care very deeply about those things. So those are the things you want to hone in on early in the sales letter. And as you do that, you're earning the right to talk about yourself for a second later in the letter.
Right. Gotcha. You talk about using the proper tone in your copy, and I think you mentioned it several times on the call today. Please reply or please call this number. Oh, that's the wrong approach, isn't that right?
Yeah, that's right, Chris. It's the wrong approach, but I understand why people put that type of language in their sales letter, because it just feels so natural to do that. It feels like it's the right approach, because with that sort of language saying, please reply or please call me, so you think you're ending the letter on the right tone, but in fact, when we do that, we're not. The call to action is where you're giving your reader instructions on how to respond and how to get in touch with you. And that needs to be done in an authoritative tone. And when I say authoritative, I don't mean pushy or overly aggressive. I just mean authoritative. And so let me back up. In your sales letter, you need to come across as an authority. And no one is going to send work your way unless they're convinced that you know what you're talking about. And how you do that is all in the way you write your sales letter. So you write it in such a way that you build up your credibility and establish yourself as an authority. Then at the end of the letter, in that moment, that critical moment, where you give the call to action, you have to maintain that authoritative tone. So you don't waver by asking that the client please contact you, because that undoes all of your hard work, and it strips away that authoritative tone that you've worked so hard at building up. Let me just give you a quick example where an authoritative tone works really well, and we can all relate to this. Take a look at instructions on a bottle or a package of prescription medication, and the instructions on those bottles, if you're looking at it, says things like, you know, take one tablet twice daily, or take this medication on a full stomach, or it might say, finish this medication. Well, nobody looks at those instructions and thinks, my goodness, my doctor's being so pushy and aggressive with these instructions. Yeah, to see, the instructions are just, they're clear and in an authoritative tone, so we follow them. But what would you think of your doctor if you got that same prescription home and the label said something like, you know, if you'd like to take a tablet or two over the next few weeks, that would be great. And please feel free to do so at your convenience. You know, it sounds absurd, and it's equally absurd if you end your sales letter like that. So remember, if you've written the sales letter correctly, you'll have earned the right to use an authoritative tone, and so you should go right ahead and do so.
I noticed in your letter that you give your prospects four ways to respond.
I'm sorry, Chris. Would you mind repeating that?
I was saying that in your package, I noticed that you give your prospects four different ways to respond.
That's right. Four different ways to respond. I give them a phone number, a fax number, a unique URL, which is a special web page that they can visit with a form on the page to enter their information and order the report that I offer in the sales letter, and a reply device so that they can manually, you know, with a pen, write their email address on the reply device and mail their response to me in the return envelope that I provide. The reason why I give them four is because you want to give your target audience different options for how they can respond and then let them decide which way they prefer. So they can, you know, they can choose how they want to respond. And it would be a mistake to say, well, I'll just give them, you know, say my email address because it's easy and everybody uses email. you know, you might guess, but you don't know for sure how your target audience or individuals within your target audience will prefer to reply. So give them several options. And I can tell you that my target audience, again, marketing directors at technology companies, these people are about as tech savvy as you can get. You know, they live by email and they're always on the internet. And even still, I got a fair amount of fax responses to my sales letter. And so, you know, I wonder if I hadn't included faxing as an option, who knows if those individuals would have responded or not. So why take that chance and just include those four options rather than just picking and choosing what you think might work?
Right. You know, I find that very interesting that you had a number of fax backs. In analysis, I'm thinking that maybe what happened is they wanted the offer, but they weren't really ready to give you their email address. So faxing is sort of a way of keeping you at arm's length until they've read the piece and are really convinced that, you know, they want a closer contact with you.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That could have been their thought process. And really, it could have been one of 100 different thought processes, right? So the more options they have, the more likely they are to respond.
Did you put your family to work?
I certainly did. You know, for me, when it came time to put the package together, everything had printed off on the printer, and I had these, you know, 70-plus letters and all these envelopes stacked up. And, you know, basically grabbed the family, and we sat around the dining room table, and we had all the envelopes stuffed and sealed in no time.
So that's the interview. I hope you found that helpful. Let's take a look back at what you saw in video one. We still got a multiple-step process to look at, and that's what we're going to talk about in the next video. Ed Gandia is going to take you through an example of an effective follow-up strategy, and he'll fill in the rest of these boxes with you. Now, at the end of each video, obviously, we always like to do an assignment. This one's going to be a really easy one. If you haven't watched video number one, go ahead and do that. It's below this video. And the second part of the assignment, well, it's actually a favor. If you've enjoyed these two videos, please go ahead and spread the word. You can look near the top of the page and click the Facebook or the Twitter buttons on there and spread the word about it. And if you notice, I'm not asking for a lot. I'm actually asking you for a Canadian favor, which at this point in time is worth just a little bit less than the U.S. favor. So it's a good deal for everybody. Hope you have a great day. Thanks for watching this video, and take care. We'll be back with video number 3 soon.